Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. The TV series Lost was an instant success when it hit the airwaves in the fall of 2004. Its debut marked the largest audience for a new ABC drama in over a decade. At its peak, Lost reached more than 23 million viewers. Am I crazy or is that a lot of viewers?
Yeah, that's a lot of viewers.
I agree. A lot of viewers.
Yep, you're right.
Yeah, that's a lot of viewers.
What?
Critics Emily St. James and Noel Murray are the authors of Lost, Back to the Island, the complete critical companion to the classic TV series. It's as entertaining and addictive as the show itself. Emily and Noel deliver essays, episode summaries, and incisive cultural analysis. Emily says that the smartest thing about Lost was the way it took the 13 main characters and stranded them on the same beach, using flashbacks to help us get to know the broken characters and their often tragic backstories. Lost burst from the gates and captivated viewers right away with a groundbreaking two-part pilot episode called Pilot.
I often cite it as the best pilot ever. There are pilots I prefer just on an artistic level or like a thing that like moves me more, but like the Lost pilot is so good at just getting all the information out, at just getting you into the story, at making everything vital and exciting and interesting. I think a lot about how John Locke is one of the most important characters in the show, but in the pilot, he doesn't really do much, but you remember him because he smiles at Walt with an orange in his mouth, and it's such a visceral image that you just instantly have in your brain. You're like, I want to know more about that guy. I think that's a real strength of J.J. Abrams, who directed and co-wrote the pilot. He left the show like 6-7 episodes in to go direct Mission Impossible 3, and it really wasn't his show from then on. But I think one of his real skills is saying, here's a bunch of cool characters, here's a world that's interesting, now I'm going to set them all in motion. And then Lost, of course, went on to be sort of shepherded by other people. I think that's really, really his skill in starting a story is so evident in this episode.
Guys, where are we?
Noel, when Lost debuted in 2004, more than 23 million people watched the show at its peak. How do you think Lost would have fared if it aired on HBO instead?
That's a great question. I think we're so far removed from that particular era of television, and it may be hard for people who, you know, younger people whose interest in television, you know, dates back to Breaking Bad or something, for them to really understand or realize how important network television was in the early 2000s. I mean, HBO obviously was extremely influential, and by 2004, you know, Sopranos was already on the air. But I think that you really needed the network TV level of budget, and you needed the network TV level of promotion to get the kind of audience that it did. And it's worth noting that ABC did not necessarily expect that Lost was going to be as successful as it was. And we write about this in the book a little bit, but there was one, you know, a brief period of time where it was considered a possibility that they would just turn that pilot into a movie, air as a TV movie, and that would be it, to try and recruit some of the expense that went into actually, you know, making it. They generally had an idea that it would do maybe okay, but the numbers it ended up doing, not just on that first part of the pilot episode, but the second part aired 1 week later and retained much of that initial audience. And so, yeah, I think that's the kind of thing that really maybe only could have happened on a network television show in 2004.
Yeah. I wonder if Lost had aired on HBO, then they wouldn't have had to crank out as many episodes. So do you think that would have made the show stronger?
I think that having 22 plus episodes for its first three seasons and 16 plus for its last three really helped Lost more than hurt it. Yes, you have weak episodes in those seasons. There's always at least one that's just god-awful, and you're like, why am I watching this show? But having that much space allowed it to build this huge tapestry, allowed you to get really involved in all of these characters, allowed you to say, oh, this new person I just met, I think a lot about how drawn I was to like Juliet, who joins the show in season three, and then she becomes just a vital part of that story. And like, that's the kind of thing that a show with a shorter episode order really struggles to do. Having a big cast, giving all of them moments to shine across a season, but also having the breathing room to do that, really, you need a lot of episodes for that. And I feel like more shows right now could benefit from having 16, 17, 18.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of large casts, Emily, you say that the smartest thing about Lost was the way it took the 13 main characters and stranded them on the same beach. Can you explain how the flashbacks helped us to get to know the characters?
Well, it's the sort of the architecture of Lost underlying everything else, and I don't think I really talk about this in the book, is something like the Love Boat. It's basically you have a bunch of people in one place and we're getting to know their story and we're sort of seeing them collide with each other. What was neat about the flashbacks was they took that basic architecture and then they said every week, in addition to the island story, we're going to have a different kind of story. The Sun and Jin stories are often very swooning love stories. You know, Saeed often has like a sort of compelling war thriller angle. Even if you weren't invested in whatever island mystery they were digging into that week, you might be watching Hurley have like comic escapades in the past. So the flashbacks and eventually flash forwards and flash sideways really allowed the show to break out of its rut. And there's shows that do this right now. You know, you have shows like Orange is the New Black, Handmaid's Tale, or the show I work on, Yellow Jackets, where they do these flashbacks and it gives you some, it's just a breather. It just gives you a thing where you're like, oh, here's something different. And it breaks up the story in a way that's really exciting and lets you get to know those characters.
Hey, don't you walk away from me. You don't know who you're dealing with. Don't ever tell me what I can't do, ever. This is destiny. This is my destiny. I'm supposed to do this, damn it! Don't tell me what I can't do! Don't tell me what I can't!
Probably, I would say, the most mind-bending moment in Lost occurs in the season 3 finale episode, Through the Looking Glass. What happens?
At the end of that episode, we've just been through really momentous action on the island. There's been one of the big deaths in the whole series happens in that episode. It's heartbreaking and tragic and all of this stuff. And you're very like emotionally wrung out. And throughout the episode, there's been this flashback to Jack Shepard, the main character played by Matthew Fox. And it's kind of just hitting some of the same beats as you've always seen. He's struggling with alcoholism. You know, he's like somebody died and he feels sad about it. And he's got that, you know, these problems with his ex-wife and so on and so forth. And you're like, I've seen all this before. And yet there's this thing in the back of your brain that's nagging at you. That's like, this is a little bit different and I can't place it. And then at the very end, he goes to LAX and watches the airplanes fly over his head, and someone pulls up and he turns around and it's Kate, who he did not know before the island. And instantly we're like, oh, they've gotten off the island. This is the future. We now are watching a story where they are trying to get back to the island. The last line of the episode famously is, we have to go back.
We have to go back!
And it nails absolutely every level. It's one of my favorite episodes of the show.
Yeah, absolutely. That's like the origin story of the flash forwards, isn't it? That's the first time they used a flash forward. Yeah, it just kind of blew my mind when I saw that. It's one of my favorite moments in the show. We can't talk about Lost without talking about The Constant. And it's such an important episode. I'd like to hear from both of you about what makes it so special.
Well, it's a couple of things. I think, you know, earlier on, Emily talked about the fact that so many characters that were not part of the original castaways, we got to meet them later on and they became fan favorites. And the people making the show, I think, were smart enough to recognize when certain actors and certain characters and certain storylines were really popping and to seize on that. That's something else you can do when you have a lot of episodes to work with, is you can kind of find ways to expand your story in that way. So in The Constant's case, you know, it's Desmond, who was introduced at the beginning of season 2 as somebody who had been on the island. He had a whole fascinating backstory as to how he got there. Mainly he arrived because he was trying to prove something to his true love, Penny. And so The Constant is kind of a love story about Desmond and Penny taking place in a strange sort of time bending narrative where Desmond is, you know, in the present on the island or actually flying off the island, and his consciousness is slipping back and forth to where he was in the past when he was, you know, trying to woo Penny. And so his brain keeps going back and forth, and what keeps him kind of connected and keeps his mind from totally melting down is his love for this woman.
Look, Desmond, I'm going to go. Please, just don't call me.
No, listen, Penny, I need you.
Did you just experience something, Desmond?
And so you have this story that is about all the weirdness that is on the island, all the stuff that fans are really interested in. But at its core, it's essentially also a story about love. And I think, again, it's fascinating that it takes place, you know, involving a character who is not one of the original castaways, but somebody that later on became someone that fans loved.
Let's talk about the two-part series finale, The End. It received mixed reviews from fans. Emily, what did you think of it?
I really love The End. I think it is flawed, but I think it has gotten a bad rap. It did not have a scene where, you know, Jacob sat down and said, here's all the stuff about the island that you want to know. And I think that some fans wanted that. Now, what sort of ended up being the most controversial element and where I sort of see the criticism is the what ended up happening with what was called the Flash Sideways, which in the final season, we saw basically a parallel timeline where everybody was slightly different. And it turned out to be, spoiler alert, like skip ahead 30 seconds if you don't want to hear this. It turned out to be the afterlife, and they were like meeting up with each other to sort of move on to the next level of whatever.
But why are they all here now?
Well, there is no now here.
A lot of people were disappointed in that reveal in a way that I find, you know, relatable to, but I was like, always very compelled by the idea that across our lives, we are many different people. And like, that is just another example of how that can be the case, made a little bit more literal by the suggestion that it's a parallel timeline.
And I've noticed, like Emily has, that with these 20th anniversary reflections, I've seen a lot more people saying, you know what, I like the finale. I don't mind saying it. So it's become a less controversial topic. And I also think you have to put the finale in the context of television at that time, including the Sopranos finale, which was extraordinarily controversial by not providing, to some people, a satisfying conclusion to that story. That just the cut to black, we don't know whether anybody dies, anybody lives, or anything. I think that finale works very well, but a lot of folks were upset by it. And I think that mentality, or you know, the reaction to that show, make their finales after that, to where they wanted to make sure they gave the audience something they could cling to. And in the case of Lost, it was, okay, we're going to give everybody a satisfying moment with these characters they love, even if it's in some kind of other universe. They are at least going to be able to see these characters one more time, see them connect one more time, and have that emotional send-off, even if it's not a, as Emily says, it doesn't explain everything that happened on the island.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. And a lot of stuff happened on the island, so maybe it was only fitting that they'd get to have a breather at the end there. 20 years later, we're still talking about Lost. Why?
I think it's one of the most influential TV shows ever made. I think it has influenced our culture in ways we don't entirely understand. The degree to which Lost discussion was very focused on the hardcore fans who knew everything about everything is now kind of how we discuss all properties that have anything sort of genre related to them. I do think it's also just the ways in which it has influenced TV storytelling. How many shows now have these flashbacks? How many shows have this kind of twisty Ouroboros storytelling? And it feels like it has seeped into the TV writing culture in a way that has ultimately been beneficial in the aftermath of the initial wave of, we're just going to try and copy Lost. You know, a show like The Handmaid's Tale is very indebted to Lost. But you wouldn't really like watch that show and be like, well, here's a Lost clone. And I think that that's just a really great thing that the show has done for TV. But also it's just a fun, memorable show. And it's like there are moments in that show that will stick in your mind forever. Like we have to go back, you know, even if you don't love those moments, you're always going to remember them. And I think that that's something that TV can do so well that other media sometimes struggle with.
Absolutely. Very well said. Noel, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I think one of the hardest things for a television show to do is to create characters that people care about. And I think the reason that Lost endures is that people still love Hurley. People still love Sawyer. They still love Charlie. I'm naming all the dudes. I'm sorry about that, but that's the problem with the show to some extent. They still love Juliet. How about that? I'll give you that one. But, you know, and I think that's one of the reasons why the show endures. But I think also to speak to what Emily was saying about the lore, I think it's had a profound effect on TV criticism to where, you know, there's a lot of attempt to sort of recapture that Lost moment when we were all like trying to break down what happened in an episode. What does it mean? And the reason why it endures is just because it's just a really very entertaining show and very easy to watch.
What was that?
That was weird, right?
Did anybody see that?
Yeah.
Emily St. James and Noel Murray, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on Lost, Back to the Island. If I ever get stranded on a very weird desert island, I hope it is with you two.
Thank you.
Emily St. James and Noel Murray are the authors of Lost, Back to the Island. Find out more about Emily, Noel, and Lost at WPR.org/beta.
These boys are only here for one night, but the creatures who are here in this neighborhood have lives and existences that have gone on forever and might still go on forever.
Coming up, Dan Coyes joins us to talk about his latest novel set in Milwaukee's Hampton Heights neighborhood during the winter of 1987. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.